Welcome to the Jared and Nolan Show. I'm Jared Cummings.
And I'm Nolan Dixon.
And today we will be discussing consumerism and journalism ethics at the pleasantly intellectual height of
Above the Fray. Meaning if you are tired of the endless heated debates on nightly news and social media, you can get a breather here while still being challenged and informed about all the things that matter. And you can catch us weekly on Tuesdays. If you have any ideas or things you'd like to hear us discuss, feel free to let us know. Send an email to jared.nolan.show@gmail.com or comment on whatever platform you're on. Thanks for listening. Welcome back. Episode number 2 for the Jared and Nolan Show, where we're tackling consumerism right off the bat.
So, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, it's been the best shopping week of the year. How was your, let's start with Thanksgiving, actually, before we get into the shopping. How was family?
Family was great. Eating was, I was going to say better, but eating was good, too. Eating
was better. Well, that's good. I hope it was better than last week. Mine was definitely better than last week.
Oh, good. Yeah, you always want to keep it on the up and up.
Delicious, yeah.
What's your favorite dish, Jared?
Oh, honestly, it changes from year to year. At home, my grandma makes this really delicious cranberry relish that I think is probably my favorite. But I was at my girlfriend's place with their family this Thanksgiving, her mom is an amazing cook, and the stuffing was to die for. It was so good. So good.
A wonderful answer on multiple fronts there, Jared.
Why, thank you.
And we go straight from consuming all afternoon Thursday for some of us to consuming all day Friday, maybe all over the weekend, and then again on Monday, just buying more and more things.
Yeah, I did all of my Christmas shopping. Black Friday deals are great for saving money while still being able to treat your family and friends to great gifts. I shopped Black Friday. I consumed a ton, feeling very broke at the moment, but I probably wouldn't have been able to afford those things normally without the discounts. So
yeah, and that's a plus, you know, more bang for your buck. Now, for those of us that might not have experienced Black Friday, or for those of us that might not necessarily have Black Friday around us, give us a quick overview and quick insight into what that felt like, the rush of trying to get that deal and trying to close this purchase that you wouldn't be able to make any other day of the year.
Yeah, well, I do most all of my Black Friday shopping online. So okay. I'm not that person who like runs into Target at 5 p.m. right after they had their Thanksgiving meal in the afternoon. I mean, I don't know if you've seen those videos on YouTube where people have literally gotten killed by a stampede. Like, I think that's an example of when consumerism has really gone too far. And let's say American culture, but I think this is more characteristic of Western culture than maybe some of the other cultures around the world. And I think it's a problem. I think when Black Friday starts at 5 p.m. on Thanksgiving Day, that the Thanksgiving holiday is becoming more about not just consuming food, but consuming materials. Because then after you've, you know, just pillaged your stomach with delicious food, you've got Friday. You know, a lot of people did multiple Friendsgivings. That's becoming very common. I had one on Friday as well. So you got Thanksgiving with the fam, Friendsgiving on Friday, and then more Black Friday, you know, small business Saturday, and then people still shopping on Sunday, and then Cyber Monday. Is it too much?
It's certainly a lot. And similar to Thanksgiving food, some people, I think, argue that, well, it is a lot the day of, or it is a lot the weekend of. But if you just keep it to that weekend or that day, then it's good, right? Indulge once in a while. Eat that feast, just as long as you're not doing it every day. I think the disconcerting thing here is that consumerism isn't just a one weekend a year thing. And although it might see an uptick during the holidays, I think in general, over the course of history, we have an uptick where consumerism is very pervasive today, where people are so focused on what they can buy next that I do think that becomes a potential obstacle for a better quality of life or a happier lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, George Bush, when he was president, there's a famous speech where he, you know, encouraged American citizens to do their patriotic duty and go shopping because it would boost the American economy.
Right?
Our economy has really shifted from production to kind of service and consumption. Manufacturing is down. A lot of that's been sent overseas or out of the country. And a lot of our economy is based on providing services for people to consume. And you brought it up. This is a change over history. You know, if we go back to, you know, the 1800s where people are working 80-hour work weeks as the norm, where they're up at, you know, sunrise, 5, 6 a.m. and don't get home till the sun sets. Whether they're working in agriculture or in the mines or even in the factories, working really long hours where work is life. And today we have a lot of restrictions on child labor, on work benefits, work hours, where the 40-hour work week is more of the norm. And yet there's a ton more material wealth. People are much better off today than they were in the 1800s.
Bigger houses, more cars, more things to fill those bigger houses with.
Yeah, yeah, more things to fill. Yeah, the American dream in the 50s was, you know, your own house, a car, a family car, and a white picket fence with a nice green front yard. And today it's everybody has a car, it seems. Well, maybe this is more on the West Coast. I don't know. On the East Coast, nobody seems to drive out here. Everybody takes the metro because there's too many people. But
location depends.
Location depends. But in general, work week hours are less. Material wealth is greatly increased, and people's leisure time when they're not working is vastly greater, which more time and money to dispense with means we have more time to consume.
Right. And I think that that's the easy step for a lot of people, that if I have more time that I don't have to work, we see a big boom in the entertainment industry. Hollywood,
although
nowadays,
the box office hasn't been doing so good now. Netflix and Hulu and Amazon are killing the game.
It's quickly gone into all these streaming services where, although maybe you're not paying for that on a show per
show
basis.
Could you imagine a coal miner binge watching, you know, House of Cards back in 1810? Like, he wouldn't have time for that. He'd get no sleep.
No, although it would be kind of neat if you were watching in the mines where you have, like, all the lights off and you just have the video screen. It'd be kind of like a movie theater down there, right?
Yeah. Fun fact about coal mining, they used to bring, like, birds and canaries, like, down into the mines because if, you know, one of the dangers of coal mining is if, you know, toxic gas gets released.
Right.
You know, it can kill people, suffocate them, they can die.
Very serious.
And the birds would tend to notice this first. So if they noticed that the bird keeled over, they knew that they had to get out of there.
That'd be an unfortunate job for the bird. But
quick side note. Yeah, if you're going to be a coal miner, get familiar with birds. They can be a lifesaver.
That's good to know. So the next time you're in a coal mine, take a canary with you.
Yeah, something like that.
But when you're not in a coal mine, as many of us find ourselves today, there's all this
time. Have you
time.
Ever been in a coal mine? This is a brief aside.
I don't think so. I've been in a cave, but never a coal mine.
You know, being out on the East Coast now and close to West Virginia, I think maybe we should do a show in the coal mine. go to the coal mine to see what's like, because Trump's bringing them back.
They have seen a revival. I like that idea. We should visit a coal mine.
Yeah, Nolan's giving me that look like, what are you doing? I'm totally off topic now. So let's bring it back. And the transition here is serious. Because we have more leisure time, less work hours, and more material wealth, the World Bank or the IMF, I forget where it's from, the poverty is down worldwide.
Right.
Only, I believe it's 25% of the world's population is under the abject poverty line, which they say is at $1.25 a day, which is down something like 50% from not 25, 30 years ago. I might not have those numbers exactly right, but the general trend is that less people are in abject poverty today. More people are well off and doing well. And this gives us more time to consume. And one of the things we fill our leisure time with is consuming the news, you know, whether that's through John Oliver last week tonight or late night shows or Netflix binge watching, but also the news. There's a ton more newspapers and blogs today than there was 50, 60 years ago.
Right.
And what do you think the effect of consumerism in American culture and maybe Western culture in general has on the news?
That's a very multifaceted question because, like you mentioned, not only are there more sources to get the news from, but there's more access to these sources. And for a lot of people, there's instantaneous access to these sources.
Yeah, the tip of your finger with your cell phone now.
Right. So instead of coming home at the end of the day and reading a newspaper or watching a certain TV show or a certain late night host, you can get the news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
24 hours, yeah.
So this consumerism, I think, has turned into making the news not only about informing people, but also about entertaining. And that's potentially very dangerous for the substance we get. And there's a lot of different effects like this. And you and I have talked a lot about the echo chamber, how when you're in a certain ideological camp or when you have certain beliefs, oftentimes we seek out something that reflects our worldview or that supports our worldview.
Yeah, there was a survey done about the 2016 election that found that most people who voted for Hillary didn't know anybody who didn't vote for Hillary.
Huh.
Whereas people who voted for Trump, most of them knew little to no people who voted for Hillary, you know.
So it's very much...
It's very, like, you know, Charles Murray covers this in his book, Coming Apart, that we kind of are the culture is dividing, it's shifting. People are going to communities that look like them, that believe like them, that talk like them.
Right.
There's almost like a natural segregation of people by beliefs, looks, party affiliation. You know, we got the left coast, the liberal east coast, you know, the more conservative or right-leaning heartland. I think an important point to bring up with this kind of division of the culture along party lines, along ideological lines, along religious, non-religious lines is how that affects the way we consume news. So everybody loves to talk about media bias. And, you know, we talked about this last time, you know, that sign I saw on my way to work, Fox News lies, you know, to appease its billionaire donors. You know, Donald Trump loves to bash on CNN. I don't know if you saw that meme of him at that World Wrestlers thing where they put that CNN logo on this person. You know, it's this fake wrestling match. But anyways, it like shows him beating up CNN. And he certainly has done that over Twitter, you know, verbal weaponry, taking down the fake news from his perspective. And I think we tend to consume, because it's a form of entertainment, just like we like to watch what we enjoy, we like to read and to hear the news that supports our ideological views or our preferences, especially when those are strong. So I have members in my family on the conservative side who will only watch Fox News and do not trust CNN or MSNBC.
Sure.
And then I have those on the left-leaning perspective that think Fox News is, you know, a load of bull and will only watch, you know, Chris Matthews Hardball, you know, which causes my conservative family members to scoff. Like, how could you listen to that?
And both view the other sources as nearly invalid.
Bias, fake news, lying.
Wow.
So what is true? I mean, this is what we keep coming back to is, you know, in this sea of distraction, of time's deception, what is true? And I think this is where we bring up this really cool book that you haven't heard about it. It's called Trust Me, I'm Lying.
Yeah.
And it's an expose of media manipulation, basically how to create fake news, how fake news is created, and why it's a whole lot more popular and a whole lot more common than you would ever fear to believe, written by Ryan Holiday. And we've both read parts of it. I'm still going through it a few chapters in. But in the introduction, Mr. Holiday basically sets the stage by outing himself. He says, I am, quote, to put it bluntly, a media manipulator. I'm paid to deceive. My job is to lie to the media so they can lie to you. I cheat, bribe, and connive for best-selling authors and billion-dollar brands and abuse my understanding of the internet to do it. Whoa.
That's a fastball.
No, that's a curveball. That's not even a hanging curveball.
It's a change
up. Like, it's just, no. Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely an off-speed pitch. I was not expecting that. I think people generally love to believe the best about others.
Right.
Maybe that's not a generalization. There are pessimists, there are cynics, but I think in general, people want to believe that other people are good. They want to believe that they themselves are good. And what Ryan Holiday is exposing in his book is that no, people are lying, they are deceiving, and they are literally creating fake news. So he talks about how he worked for a client named Tucker doing a campaign for the movie I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell, also a very provocative title. And he created a sticker accusing Tucker Max, who plays in the movie, of some, it's like a lewd, provocative big banner. And he went into the city, I think it was somewhere in California.
Over in your neck of the woods.
He posted, or Chicago maybe,
more
posted this
woods.
Big advertisement and then sent from a fake email this picture of his advertisement that he created,
right,
criticizing his boss and his boss's movie, and said, oh, you know, send it to like the local news stations, a couple local blogs, like, look at this bad movie that's coming out and all the controversy. And so it's a primary source. And this story then works its way up the chain. He catches a blog, writes about it, saying, whoa, look at this crazy sign in the neighborhood near you. And then that local blog in that small town, then it gets picked up by kind of the region's newspaper.
Yeah.
The local newspaper makes the local news channel. And then it works its way up to the national newspapers, the national news, where they're talking about this little movie, you know, because it's created an outcry in this small town. And fake news becomes real news on a local and national level. And it's fabricated.
Completely the work of one man's hand playing many different roles.
Yeah, sending multiple emails, you know, of this picture, pretending to be multiple people.
Right. And then one blog believing him, and then everyone subsequently believing that blog or the next person up the chain.
Yeah. He writes in here, I created false perceptions through blogs, which led to bad conclusions and wrong decisions, real decisions in the real world that had real consequences for real people.
You know, so from a scientific background, I kind of like to think of this as biomagnification. So for those of you that walk your...
That is a big word.
It's a nice
pause
word.
For a second. And what is biomagnification?
Everyone out there, if you want to say that with me, biomagnification. So we'll break it. I mean, it's biology being magnified. And this is the reason why a lot of people tell you to watch your fish intake. A lot of times people are worried about mercury levels.
Okay.
So it's this sense that if a little fish eats a little bit of mercury, that's not that big of a deal. But a big fish has to eat, you know, three little fishes to get full. And so then instead of getting a little bit of mercury, it gets three times the amount of mercury that little fish got. And then big fish number two eats big fish number one. But instead of eating just one big fish number one, it eats multiple big fishes. So you have this mercury that doesn't leave the fish's system getting further and further concentrated. So you're just adding more mercury.
Oh.
So that by the time you get up to the tuna fish that's going to be canned for your dinner, there's a lot of mercury coming from multiple levels of fish that it ate. And so maybe the analogy isn't perfect here, but if you get a big news station that's taking the story of a smaller news station, like a regional, that's taking the story of a local, that's taking the story of maybe an independent blogger,
mm-hmm.
you get this seed of untruth or this falsified information, and it just gets magnified up the news food chain.
Mm-hmm.
And so now all of a sudden, instead of being an innocent Ryan Holiday out at a billboard, or even being an innocent prank, maybe we talked about some farcical websites, now it infects the national landscape, and it's infecting the realities of hundreds of millions of people.
Yeah, their perceptions about what is real.
Right. It's really changing their belief.
Yeah, so going back to this book, Trust Me, I'm Lying, by Ryan Holiday, he writes in the introduction, page 29 of the ebook edition, he says, "I designed the advertisements, which I bought and placed around the country, and then promptly called and left anonymous complaints about them, also sending leaked copies of his complaints to blogs via email for support, fake emails that were by different names." He went by a fake name. Let me see if I can
find it. These fake email addresses are readily available to you and me. So if you want
anybody,
to.
Anybody can create an email address on YouTube or not YouTube. Google. Sorry, losing track of my train of thought here. But he said, then I alerted college LGBT and women's rights groups to screenings in their area and baited them to protest our offensive movie at the theater, knowing that the nightly news would cover it if they protested. Quote, I started a boycott group on Facebook. I orchestrated fake tweets and posted fake comments to articles online. And then he says, I even won a contest for being the first one to send in a picture of a defaced ad in Chicago. Thanks for the free t-shirt, Chicago Red Eye. he manufactured preposterous stories about Tucker's behavior on and off the movie set and reported them to gossip websites, which gleefully repeated them. I paid for anti-woman ads on feminist websites and anti-religion ads on Christian websites, knowing that each would write about it. Sometimes I just photoshopped ads onto screenshots of websites and got coverage for controversial ads that never actually ran. And this created a massive, what he calls, you know, a shitstorm of press. Good press, well, mostly bad press. But it caused people to want to see the movie. It caused people to know about the movie. And the movie did well with basically almost no budget, with just a little bit of fake news to create a storm.
And, you know, there was the saying, or there is the saying, that no publicity is bad publicity.
Yeah, no press is bad press.
But usually that was reserved more for political figures and
Do you think
actors.
That's why Donald Trump won?
There's certainly that speculation, I think, going around. And I think it's important to look at that quote or that cliche, no press is bad press, now being applied to the press. Mm. What are the incentives for our news stations, our television stations, the websites we visit every day? Are there incentives for them to give us content and substance? Or are the incentives to give us sensationalist news that we want to click on?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think probably from the beginning, there was a general interest in reporting what was actually going on. I think there still is a general interest to report what's actually going on, to cover in the news. But that business model of news is often based on getting views. TV news is based on ratings, mm-hmm. and getting eyes. And then with social media now, the way those mm-hmm. clips get shared, it's about comments, shares, likes. And the fact of the matter is, controversy and scandal is exciting. It gets eyes, it gets views, which is why we typically hear more about the crime that happened next door, you know, down the street, as opposed to the, you know, Good Samaritan neighbor that, you know, brought food over to the new person on the block. It's more exciting to hear, like, the dangerous of the bad stuff going on than it is, you know, the simple acts of kindness.
And it's not just murder stories versus do-good stories. I'd also pose the dichotomy of, you know, reality shows versus reality. So people want to hear about The Bachelorette or The Bachelor or Jersey Shore or whatever the new PCB Shore is. That's going to get more. I'm not entirely sure.
Man, you are up on these. I was naming the news sources, but you got these popular shows. It's good.
So you have that coming in that people generally might be more inclined to watch or listen to than information about the tax reforms that are, you know, in the Senate and the House as we speak. So
are you saying you would rather watch Jersey Shore than read page after page of the Congressional Budget Office's numbers on tax reform?
To be honest, Jared, I probably wouldn't really enjoy doing either.
Well, this is why we're above the fray. This is why we are unique.
But I think the majority of people aren't interested in reading, you're right, page after page of mundane things that that impact our reality. And instead, it's more enjoyable, it's less engaging or challenging mentally.
Yeah.
And it is that consumerist appetite that wants us to see these shows or to read these gossip pages or to pay attention to this news that we otherwise might recognize as ridiculous, but we go along for the ride because we're curious and because we do believe that people are going to tell the truth, and we're excited to know what's out there. So I think the human curiosity is pure, but now the sources that play on that curiosity are muddled.
They're manipulating it, yeah, as Ryan Holiday talks in his book. And I think a good example of this is actually what Project Veritas uncovered at CNN. Now, there's a lot of controversy around Project Veritas, which is an undercover news type source where they send people into organizations that pretend to be liberal or pretend to be conservative or pretend they got popular because they had people go to abortion clinics and pretend to be interested in abortion or pregnancy services and film with hidden cameras the responses of people at Planned Parenthood. And some of their responses were very honestly grotesque and disturbing about kind of how nonchalantly they talked about it. But the most recent one is an undercover video they have at CNN with multiple workers there, and including some higher up organizers, news producers, saying that the Russia story was made up. That the Russian dossier, they didn't really have any serious evidence linking Donald Trump to Russia, but that the controversy was getting a lot of views, their ratings were going up, and right. So the top down was directing, we need more stories about Trump and Russia because this is what's popular. This is what people are interested in. This is what people want to consume, even though there wasn't a whole lot of factual evidence to base it. And yet today still there will be Democrats and those saying that this stuff, which has been proven, and the FBI has testified before Congress that it was – the money trail has been released. The court documents were was unsealed, the financial statements. This company, Fusion GPS, was paid by Hillary Clinton and Democratic law firms to hire a British spy to create a fake document accusing Trump of no less hiring prostitutes to pee on a bed that Obama and Michelle Obama apparently slept in because he hated Obama so much. And then claiming all these connections to Russia. So it was a huge smear, real controversy, like some serious claims made.
Yeah.
And the FBI looked into it and still is looking into it. But it's been shown that this quote-unquote dossier was fabricated. And they haven't been able to substantiate the claims. And then Project Veritas has this video, undercover video at CNN saying, more Russia, more ratings.
Which is hard to dispute, right? There is a certain intrigue, but that comment you're saying, more Russia, more ratings, is showing that the focus has shifted from...
People are... this is what they want to consume. And that's...
As
and that's,
a news source, we need to give them that.
And so the news source is catering to that. But the sacrifice is journalistic ethics.
Yeah.
The reality, the truth of the matter, if Trump actually does or doesn't have connections to Russia, that is being sacrificed. The reality and truth is being sacrificed at the altar of consumerism and like ideological self-affirmation.
And let's not get too pessimistic here. Now there are alternatives to this incentive structure. And I think this is where a lot of people get upset with advertisements or maybe the capitalist form of media where they say, well, that's just it. That's the problem, is that money drives this machine. And to a certain degree, I think there's some truth. Journalists need to eat too. They have bodies to clothe and a lot of them have families to feed. So journalists need to make a paycheck too. So the question is, where do those incentives come from? A lot of that is advertisements. in today's world where you don't necessarily have to pay to see a website or pay to see certain news.
Right.
But there are different methods cropping up. So there's paywalls that newspapers and magazines will institute so that you can contribute. So it's the subscription base applied to an internet structure.
Mm-hmm.
There's services like, am I saying this right, Patreon?
Yeah, Patreon. That's become very popular.
So there are certain movements to change the incentive structure on an incremental basis. But I think what we're seeing is that that's certainly not making a dent.
And well, it still produces a bias. You know, if you watch like Glenn Beck, The Blaze, or InfoWars, the types of companies that advertise on these shows, it's like survival, food prep, you know, the atomic beam, you know, and it kind of caters to this fear mentality.
Yeah.
That appeals to a certain degree of the audience.
You know, Jared, another ad I saw recently was one about burkinis.
What?
What? So burkinis is a certain type of women's swimwear. And you wouldn't think that your comment about fear advertising would trigger this, but this burkini update came from a terrorism watch desk.
What do you mean a terrorism watch desk?
So John Oliver did a nice expose on Sinclair Broadcasting Group, I believe.
Okay.
Where there is a central or a parent company that makes media content, advertisements, or segments that should be run, and they require all of their subsidiaries, which might be regional news shows, it might be local TV shows.
So there's a big group that owns local TV news stations.
Yes. So there might be a local TV station in Florida that's owned by the same parent company as one in Montana, that's owned by the same company as one in the Southwest. And this parent company sends them these segments that they either require them to show as an advertisement.
Is it like a must run?
That's the term they use. And
my college journalism coming in here, must run.
That's good. That's very good. You hear that, Mr. and Mrs. Cummings? College educated. And so there's these must run advertisements and there's must run segments. So even though you might see it on your local news station, the impetus is coming from a parent company. It's coming from someone that's not related to your community, and that
not even necessarily local news.
No, it's certain. That's even better. It's not necessarily local news.
Hmm. So what exactly was this advertisement about burkinis, and what was the controversy around it?
So the controversy around it, the advertisement was, it wasn't really an advertisement. I guess it was a news break or a news segment where it cuts out of
called
your weather.
The terrorism watch desk?
Right. It cuts out of your weather and it goes to the terrorism news
watch desk.
Thank
like that,
you.
Yeah.
You know this better than I do. And you get this, you know, this red coloring. So you're on high alert already. And it talks about what you need to know about terrorism in the world on your local news channel.
Featuring people swimming at the beach in burkinis.
And one of these watch desks had just that. Featuring people swimming in the beach at burkinis and talking about outline burkinis. And the controversy here is implying that
somebody swimming in a burkini is not a terrorist.
Or that burkinis or the practice of wearing or not wearing them is remotely related to terrorism, which I think you and I would agree probably isn't the best indicator.
No, I don't think. Yeah, that's a stretch for sure.
So now you're having this parent company making local news run segments that are starting to imply cultural significance, tying cultures with terrorism.
And in other words, the journalism ethics are highly questionable.
Highly questionable, but the important thing to recognize here is your local news station has their hands tied. It's not necessarily an
option.
They have to
run it. They can't do anything about it. It's mandated by the parent company.
That's right. It's like if your parent owns your car and you want to drive it one way and they say, you're driving it this way or you're driving it that way.
And by driving it this way or that way, we both mean driving the speed limit.
But it's not as easy as that, right? The way some local news stations get around this speed limit is they play these news segments, not the news segments, but at least the advertisements, at the lowest watch times of the day.
Oh, interesting. But they still have to run it. So, you know, even if it's at like 4 something a.m. There's still a couple of people there. So, okay, this is interesting. So we have some examples, some liberal examples, some conservative examples, like right. Sinclair Broadcasting, maybe conservative, I'm not entirely sure, but I think it sounds safe that bet. Way. Of these news organizations arguably running or promoting highly questionable ethics about the reporting and kind of the story they're telling and the facts that they're using that is being consumed by their viewers, which this is maybe a good time to throw back. The Washington Post actually did an article in 2014 saying, ranking the media from liberal to conservative based on their audiences, where they kind of profile that there are media outlets that liberals, according – this is based on a Pew Research study, okay. tend to prefer the New Yorker and Slate ranking number one, whereas Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Breitbart.com, Fox's audience, these tend to be more right-leaning. Whereas it says broadcast stations like NBC, CBS, ABC, online news sites like Yahoo and Google tend to be more middle of the road in okay. terms of their audience. Hmm. And so if these are their consumers and these are the people who are viewing and clicking on their advertisements, giving them ratings, right. you know, sharing these posts on social media, there seems to be a bias, as we pointed out, with some of the ads that get run. As well as the content that gets shown that is like an echo chamber in terms of it affirms maybe their ideological leaning and maybe is more questionable in terms of its portrayal of reality, the truth, or the facts.
And I think this becomes
a result of consumerism.
Yes, absolutely, where instead of consuming goods, we have now evolved to consuming information.
On our phones, on our computers.
And part of that information is the news, or was the news.
That is now more sensational, more entertaining, more commentary, more opinion, and not necessarily the truth.
And so all of our realities are getting a little bit confuddled because
warped.
Of...
Yeah, warped.
Warped, a better term.
I think this actually contributes to the culture war. Is it infuriates people? They see these ads, it creates fear about burkinis. CNN, it creates fear that Trump is a Putin puppet.
Right.
It creates controversy and scandal, sometimes out of nothing. Like the what Holiday covers in his book, and this is really important. I want to share this. I did a study abroad in China, and mm-hmm. I think I actually mentioned this. This is where I had to eat chicken foot.
Where you had the chicken foot.
Yeah, the sauce they put on chicken foot was this peanut butter sauce. This is disgusting, but some people really liked it. Okay, back
that
to the topic.
That wasn't what you had to share.
I didn't share that, yeah, but I did talk about the sauce. So in China, they have a really strict control of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain sites that you can and can't access. Facebook for a long time has been banned. Google severely restricted.
Right.
A lot of Western media totally restricted. And most all of the news sites are state-owned.
And so for those of us that haven't been to China, Jared, this would kind of like be clicking on a link in the United States and it says website not found or
does not
locate.
Exist. Exactly. Your 404 error. But I don't even know that they would get a 404 error. It just is like censored. Like, I don't even think it might redirect you to something. I don't know what they get.
Bottom line is they can't access
they can't
a lot
access
of the websites.
So you can't log into Facebook or Instagram. Those things are banned. And so a lot of Western media, which is critical of the Chinese government, which tends to be communist, is communist. It's a communist state. I was talking with some locals and asked them their thoughts. One of the guys actually shared with me that, he doesn't know why, because he hasn't accessed, he didn't know what Reuters was, he didn't know what the Wall Street Journal was, he never heard of, ABC, NBC, never heard of these. I asked him what he thought of the news, and he kind of said, I don't know that they always tell us the truth. But what was more important, not just hearing that from a local, my perception of Western culture was severely changed. Not severe in a bad way, but being divorced from Western media for 3 weeks, not getting any of the crazy headlines from you know, not seeing any controversy or scandal, you know, Trump's right. working for Russia, you know, the Republicans are going to destroy the government by, you know, defaulting, you know, by shutting down the government, you know, whatever the sensational something. Headlines that we see that just make you angry, infuriated, frustrated, sad, depressed. I didn't get any of that for 3 weeks. And so I came back being very appreciative for the prosperity that I see in the United States. And also appreciative for the culture that I generally experience in the United States.
Right.
I still think that there is something that America does right, that we do well, that we, while we're not perfect and we have flaws and, you know, major flaws in our past, that we are still making an effort to do what's right and to right the wrongs, to end slavery, to reform the criminal justice system, to ensure that everybody has an opportunity to succeed. Like, these are things that we are striving to do, even though we don't always do it well.
Right. And there's definitely bumps along the road.
And yet, after that trip, heard a speech by this guy named Matt Walsh, conservative commentator, railing on how America is like one of the worst countries in the world. And I asked him after his lecture, you know, he basically said America is like this sinner nation, has all these terrible problems. And that was like the theme of his speech, that he gave a lot of specific examples and facts, all true. But I asked him, had he ever traveled out of the country?
Ah.
He hadn't. He said Canada once, but nothing else beside that. And I told him about my trip from China. And I think everybody needs to get out of the United States who hasn't traveled out, because the rest of the world is very different. Very different. And I think it makes you appreciative for what we are doing right at home.
Thanks for sharing that, Jerry.
Yeah. So I think that the point from that whole story is that our media, based on the leisure time that we have and the consumerism that has become rampant in our culture, is entertaining us, sensationalizing us, creating scandal and fear and some fake news that is just getting views, comments, likes, shares. It's not as bad as everybody thinks it is or says it is.
So it's important to be aware of the consumerism in our culture, but it's also important to be aware of the other cultures that exist and the magnitude of these problems in perspective.
In context.
To what others are experiencing around the world and to what we've come from, and hopefully to a better place that we're going. I want to add, we've given a lot of analogies today, some of them that we've experienced and some of them contrived. And I think the last one I'll leave us with is, there's three fish swimming. Two fish are going one way, red one fish is going the other way. They can be whatever yellow color fish you want. And as the one fish passes the other, they say, "How's the water today?" And the fish kind of looks puzzled but replies, "Fine." So those two fish swim on, and as they go past, that fish that said fine turns to his companion and says, "What the heck is water?" So sometimes fish are the last to realize that they're swimming in water. And I think that's what you're saying, where it's so important to realize the culture that surrounds us, the context that we ourselves are in, and that the stories we read are in.
Our quote-unquote news, our quote-unquote journalists has become sensationalized, has become, you know, exaggerated with these headlines, and yet we take it as real news because that's what we're seeing.
Right, and that's the water we're used to. But it's important to get outside of our fishbowl, to travel to other countries.
Mm-hmm.
At some point in the near future, maybe travel to other planets, and to be able to give ourselves some perspective to understand what we're dealing with in the context of the larger picture.
To get a good, true picture of reality.
And to be fair, there's probably multiple...
Because the world's very small inside a fishbowl, but very big outside of it.
I like that. Well said.
Well, this has been the Jared and Nolan Show.
We hope you enjoy your life outside of the fishbowl.
Outside of the fishbowl. Above that fray.
Above that fray.